Hello and welcome to our first season 4 episode of ATN Betches. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Aileen.
And you are listening to our weekly succession recap.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
Are you all right?
If you are a normal At Betches listener and you're like, what is this special episode in our feed? This is where we'll be doing weekly succession recaps for the rest of season 4, which I believe will be 10 weeks. So you can find us here. And if you haven't watched Succession yet, we highly recommend it.
Highly recommend. Sammy, I am so excited to be here. Are you?
I mean, there are no words. Yesterday, I finally felt that I understood what people look forward to in like a sports game. I'm like, my whole day was sort of just thinking about a sports ball. My whole day was just revolving around, you know, this being on. And honestly, I was very satisfied with what we got. I think it was a great premiere. It kicked off just in a very seamless, exciting way. You completely understand where we're standing in terms of the world of the family, Roy. Mm-hmm. So what was your like overall impression?
My impression was just like you said, it was like a great jump off, like a great setup. They're setting us up for how the season may go. It's kids versus Logan. And there's a lot of things that have to happen for them. And they are conflicting, like for Logan and for the kids. And then their interpersonal dynamics and relationships like Tom and Shiv. And it's all just so exciting.
All right. Before we get into our first segment, our shareholder earnings report, I do want to shout out that Aileen and I, if you've been following Betches for a while, we used to recap shows like personally. We used to score Real Housewives episodes and rank the Real Housewives by betchiness. So we are returning to that format for Succession on the website on betches.com. And we are doing a new type of scale, especially for the Roy family. And every week we are going to be determining who deserves to fuck off this week. We're ranking them. We have like a whole mathematical formula going on. So after you listen to this episode or before, check out the recap on betches.com. These will be every week. And yeah, you can get the recap in whatever form you like. You can get it in your ears. You can get it with your eyes. You can get it in your inbox. I don't fucking
with your eyes.
Well, anyway.
We have something for all the senses.
We hear for you literally.
Literally. The recap's going to be great. I'm also just excited to have like that back on our website. Like, first of all, we started The Bachelor making fun of franchise. We started those recaps. Then we went to Pretty Little Liars.
And we had revenge first.
Well, we had revenge, right? That was so fun.
I know. I miss when TV was an event. I love recapping, but not – I didn't really like recapping The Bachelor, but I do love recapping shows that I love. So Succession, White Lotus, Real Housewives, you got me. I'm also going on Mention It All today, and we're doing a Real Housewives fantasy draft. Oh, so fun. I'm really excited. That episode will be out, I think, like in a few weeks. Anyway, Aileen, should we get into our shareholder earnings report?
I think we shall. Okay. Sammy, what do you rank this episode? How many way stars?
I'm giving this episode 4 way stars.
4.
Because I thought it was really good. I thought it was a great premiere, but it was not, you know, it wasn't 5 stars to me. Yeah. We need room for something that's a little bit of a step up from this. And that's okay. You know, for a premiere to be 5 stars, you are setting a really high bar.
In fact, I agree with you. And as Kendall said, except the opposite, I'm going to nickel and dime them. And I'm going to give them 3.5 because it was good. Like, there was juicy, funny – I keep saying juicy. It was just such great banter and like one scene that really tore me up, which we can get to. But overall, I think there wasn't a lot of action. And my favorite character of this episode wasn't one of the main characters. So it just – I feel like it was – a 3.5, even though I fully enjoyed it. You know, it's a good middle ground and there's a lot of upside here.
I hear you. See, I'm like, you know, I'm much more likely to round up. You know, it's very divisible. 4 is more divisible. So
you don't want to nickel and dime them.
I don't want to insult them, you know?
Let's talk about everything that happened in this episode. I feel like there weren't a lot of scenes. There weren't a lot of big moments. Generally, it was Logan's birthday party, sad birthday party in his penthouse or whatever his apartment is called. Simultaneously happening is are the siblings in there? Are they in Malibu? You said they were in Malibu?
I think they're in Malibu.
It looked like somewhere in California.
It's California. It's Southern California. Yeah.
And they are in this beautiful home. Like, I was just dying when I was just – their kitchen opened to that indoor-outdoor dining. I just loved it. So
do you want to guess how much it was? Architectural Digest did a feature.
Oh, really? How much?
Yeah.
$21 million. Yes.
Oh, way more.
$48 million.
Way more.
$72 million?
$83 million.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
How did they do that?
I mean, the price could be in half in a you know, that's like, it's kind of fake. But yeah, there's an Architectural Digest. But there's not really any photos, which kind of bothers me. It's like, why do I want to read this verbal description of this house, you know, and see one shot, still shot from the show? Anyway, back to the show.
So the two things are happening. Logan is having his birthday party, and the children, well, minus Connor. Connor's at the birthday party. The children are together, and they are about to pitch their new media venture called The 100 to these foreign investors who've taken a long flight to come meet them. And those two things are happening at the same time. In the middle of that, we find out that actually they're also – Logan is in the middle of not only about to sell to Gojo in 48 hours – but he's also trying to acquire Pierce. Twist of events. Like, I did not expect this to be happening. So Tom calls and warns Shiv about it, not because of anything. I thought it was kind of interesting that he called Shiv, knowing how sensitive that information was.
I have a lot. I have a whole interpretation on that scene, but
I'll go through like the major plot points, and then we'll go and discuss it all. Tom sort of warns Shiv because he doesn't want, like, the pictures to think, like, he's dating her because he told Marilinda that it was not on business. And so Shiv sniffs out, or the kids sniff out, that actually this isn't a date and maybe Pierce is going to be acquired.
I thought it was really interesting and felt pretty realistic the way that they figured out that this – interaction between Tom and Naomi was not necessarily a date, because at the same time as the three kids are in their house in Malibu, Logan's having his birthday party, and Greg's date, Instagram, Bridget, posted one of the Pierce kids at Logan's party. So Kendall has a team member who sends him this Instagram sighting, and they're able to figure out that this is a business thing and an acquisition of Pierce is actually in play.
So then the kids are like, wait, fuck this venture that we wanted to do, which also the whole conversation around this was hilarious. We'll talk about. They decide, actually, let's pivot. We're going to buy Pierce and like really stick it to dad. But also, like Shiv says, I really want to do something during the seminal election. So they call Nan. Nan is basically saying she has an offer, but please come. And then this turns into them negotiating at Nan's with the Nan cousins family, with the Pierce family. Meanwhile, Logan is at his home in his action station during the birthday party in the separate room. And they're negotiating sort of with Pierce. So they're like communicating through Pierce. And that's kind of funny, like through this negotiation, which has like literally nothing to do with this like Gojo. I mean, it does slightly, but it's just kind of funny like how we leave off last season having totally forgotten about Pierce. And now this is like the main plot of this episode, which how did you make of that? What did you make of that?
Well, I think that was contextualized by Kendall's comment that he makes that was really one of my favorite lines in the episode, that wouldn't it be funny if we screwed dad over his decades-old obsession? Mm-hmm. So my feeling is that Pierce has come up this whole – let's say the whole show has taken place over the past year. I don't really think it's that weird that a few months later, he would sort of be back on a few months in the grand scheme of things. Like, let's say it was like 9 months, that he would be kind of back on the Pierce train, especially if Kendall's saying it was a decades old obsession. And we know that Logan is more passionate about owning the news because of the influence it would give him than he is about the money. So I think it's sort of just something that his kids know that he's probably come back to a bunch, and that they, it's not really that out of left field that he would be wanting it again.
But it's just funny that this is how it starts out. So that's happening. That negotiation happens. And then we're like thrown into the end of the episode. And we'll talk about what happens. We're thrown into the end of the episode where finally, like, the two sides meet. But the two sides meet through Tom and Shiv at their apartment. And they essentially discuss that they're going to get a divorce. But really, I think, and you think, I know we both think that Shiv really just kind of pushes her into it because she promised Nan that she's getting a divorce, even though they were just doing a trial separation. And so she's like, I guess I have to go through with it. And so she, in the apartment, says, like, I think we should just, like, this is the end of the road, I think. And then it was just this like, pretty – I cried. I cried in the scene because it just felt so sad. Even though you know all of the history between them and, like, how they've deeply hurt each other, it was just such a sad moment because you sort of did feel a little love that they had. Like, when they held hands and they were just like, we gave it a go, and we did give it a go. And then they held their hands together on the bed. They didn't want to be apart.
I agree. They didn't want to be apart, but they don't – okay, what I thought was interesting is we enter – they've only been married for a few months in the grand scheme of things. And it's not like they were this, like, long-standing couple before. I think we have that context. So this is not that – established of a couple. You know, they haven't been in each other's lives that long in the grand scheme of things. So I think what's interesting is we assume up till now there was just sort of the trial separation happening. But then in this episode, their incentives sort of each change. Tom has that conversation with Logan, like, if there were to be a divorce, would we still be good? And Logan says, if we're good, we're good, which is kind of a threat. And then Shiv has this other incentive that maybe she didn't have before, where she sort of, like, forces herself into needing to get a divorce because she said to Nan that she would. Right. And so she goes back and says that. And so it's a kind of a combination of their business incentives and their lack of any sort of communication, really, Shiv's fault, because she wanted him to stay, but she didn't say that. So she just, like, holds his hand. I don't really feel like they gave it a go. Like, it's been a few months.
No, absolutely not. I think it's been longer, but they definitely –
since their wedding? At the end of season one?
Yeah, it's been longer.
But it's only Logan's birthday. Like, it's only been Logan's birthday once.
Right, because his birthday was in Scotland?
Yeah, and there was only one shareholders meeting, like the annual shareholders meeting.
I guess.
Kendall had one birthday. Like, it's all 1 year.
Too much birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was sad, though, because Shiv was – she obviously – she wasn't even afraid to be vulnerable just in that moment of, like, asking him to leave. She didn't want to talk about how Tom betrayed her and why. Like, he was like, there's an explanation. Like, I want to talk to you about it. And she's like, no, it's not – I don't want to do that, because she didn't want to unearth that, like – when she really lost all of that power in their relationship, she lost that full dynamic. Like, and she needed it to be in that marriage. Like, she needs to be ahead of Tom. As Logan said, you married a man fathoms beneath you because you were afraid of he might betray you, because he won't betray you, and then Tom does. And it just doesn't work for her in that way.
It made me think of the conversation between Shiv and her mother, who she seems very similar to, when she says of Logan, he never saw something he didn't love and kick to see if it would come back. Mm-hmm. It feels to me like Shiv does that too, but she doesn't have the power to get them to keep coming back. Another thing that's become apparent in this episode when he goes to the diner with Colin is that there is really no one in his life who he has any relationship with that is not based on finances and him either controlling them or paying them. Like, even Colin, he pays, you know. So that works for Logan because people are always going to come back to him because he's, you know, the big dog. But Shiv tried to kick Tom, I think, a few too many times, and he ended up just going to Logan, who's the one controlling her.
Mm-hmm. I think that happens a lot to really rich people, the like isolation.
I agree. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's what happens. And also, I forgot to mention that actually the kids won. They won the bidding
verbal
war,
negotiation.
The verbal negotiation, the indicative offer. But that's for now. We'll see what actually happens because they need the money from the Gojo sale. And we still have 48 hours to find out what happens with that. Listen, we all know that scratchy PJs can make a cranky kid. I want my kids to be comfy when they sleep and are rested in the morning, and that's why I snuggle them up in Little Sleepies. Little Sleepies makes award-winning bamboo PJs that moms rave about. I am said mom. I am obsessed with Little Sleepies. They are so, so, so soft. I just got one that was the Checkmates Zippy for my son Lucas. It's so adorable. And it's limited edition, so everybody go check it out. Little Sleepies Zip Romper Pajamas, aka Zippies, the ones that I got, were designed with thoughtful details like fold-over feet, mittens, and a double zipper to make the middle of the night diaper changes easier. Made from the buttery soft, custom-milled Luna Luxe Bamboo Viscose, their zip footy pajamas are gentle on sensitive skin and babies with eczema. But what parents rave about the most? How long they fit. And Little Sleepies makes the best baby shower gift. They have inclusive sizing from preemie to adults 3X. There are also nursing and pregnancy-friendly styles available for adults. So try a pair of Little Sleepies today. Fair warning, you'll never go back. You can try Little Sleepies for yourself by visiting littlesleepies.com. Plus, get 15% off your order on littlesleepies.com with code BETCHES. That's littlesleepies.com with promo code BETCHES.
For years, I've been using men's razors because the quality of razors for women is seriously questionable. But disposable men's razors feel like settling. I finally tried the Athena Club razor I've been seeing online, and it was truly the easiest, smoothest shave ever. My old razors, honestly, they would rust up so quickly, and the shave I would get was so dull. My legs would get super dry. It would just be like an uncomfortable razor experience. But this razor is truly worth the hype. If you haven't tried it, you really need to give it a shot. Step up your shaving game now with Athena Club's award-winning razor kit. It's seriously the best on the market, and here's why. First of all, the Athena Club razor kit is an absolute steal at just $10. But don't let the price fool you. This razor packs a serious punch. It comes with a beautifully made ergonomic handle and two super sharp razor heads that deliver an incredibly smooth shave every time. You also get a game-changing magnetic hook in the razor kit for easy storage. This means no sitting your razor on the edge of your tub, no more goopy blades, no more razor falling down your shower floor in the middle of the night. Athena Club's razor glides effortlessly thanks to those 5 precision-engineered blades. The blades are perfectly spaced out to let your hair pass through with each stroke, and you'll experience less irritation, which is always a win in my book. Are you ready to upgrade your shaving experience? Switch to the best razor on the market and show your skin you care with Athena Club. Head over to athenaclub.com to try their award-winning razor and body products and get 20% off your purchase with code BETCHES at checkout. You can also find Athena Club razors at your local Target store. Trust me, you won't look back. Happy shaving.
All right, let's talk about our favorite quotes and discuss how we felt about this episode.
Nice memes, good memeage, and so on.
I don't know where to start. I do know my favorite interaction, like the one I enjoyed the most, like was most entertained by that I could like rewatch a bunch of times. But there were so many good little morsels of quotes.
Yeah, I've now watched it 3 times.
I watched it twice.
I've caught more each time. Like even on my 3rd time, I was still catching more.
Yeah.
It is really, really hard to figure out my favorite quote. I have a lot. Maybe we just do sort of like a favorite quote battle.
Like a quote off?
A quote off.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Who goes first?
Because my notes app is literally the whole script.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of embarrassing.
That was my notes app for the finale when we were taking notes for the last episode that we did when we recapped the last season 3 finale. Okay, I'll just say my favorite moment. It's not just one quote. It's the conversation. It's okay. Nan Pierce. Nan Pierce is my favorite.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite
quote too. Moment. Does this win the best moment? It's gotta. It was the funniest.
Okay, let's just go through this one.
This is the moment. this is very confusing. I don't want to talk numbers. And Kendall goes, sure, sure. But should we just say our number, though? And then she goes, ugh, I don't like this. Makes me feel like I'm in the middle of a bidding war. Horrible. Different people saying different numbers. 8, 9, what's next? And then Roman goes, I know, so confusing. What comes after 9? 9B? That was the best, I think. It was just the banter. Like, because Kendall does the same thing he did in that, like, in that bunker room when there was, like, that shooting with, he's like, well, let's just say the, you know, like, there is a number. And he does the same thing. Sure, sure. But do you want us just to say our number? And Roman takes his, like, everybody just says things they would say. And that's what is so good about the show. Like, the character development is perfect. Okay, so what's yours? Go.
My favorite part of that moment was when, was like the camera work when she goes and pours herself a glass of water, like the way a man would pour himself a glass of scotch at the sidebar.
Yeah.
I thought that that just made it like that really contributed to the humor of it. There were a lot of things that Nan said in that conversation. I think that was probably the best one. But before that, when she was like, you didn't need to come all the way here. We already have an offer. And then she's like, but maybe I offer you some bottles for the road. They might as well be jars of jam to me, but the connoisseurs seem to like them. I myself got a taste for Hiver Maché Vin Ordinaire when I was 19, and I have never been able to shake it. Like, she is so pretentious.
So pretentious. But, I'm so sorry for this skerfuffle, but I've just had the worst migraine. It's just
right. And Naomi, how she's like, she might be getting a migraine, but maybe she'll be down in 10 minutes. It's like, this bitch does not have a migraine.
Obviously. She's talking to Logan.
Yeah. I thought there was, oh my gosh, all of her stuff about, oh, and then how she was like, you know, I don't know how much I need. There's, you know, Jamie's divorce and Anne's disaster in Maine and this place. How's your financing?
Not that I understand it at all. Also, so funny when Shiv comes in and says, we're very relaxed about the 8 billion landing spot. And she turns, and Nan turns around and goes, this is disgusting.
And then Naomi goes back out to them and goes, Nan appreciates the $8 billion offer, but she's wondering if there's a little more upside. It's like, you mean you want a higher number? Like, where's the upside?
It's just so, it's, and then like, she just walks out. It's really so good.
Oh, but also when they, like, as if she isn't incredibly conscious of money at all times, because even when she walks in and they compliment the house, she goes, it seems like they shred $100 notes for fertilizer around here. It's like, all she thinks about is money. And she just pulls this,
and like, pretends like she doesn't think about money.
Right, but she comes across extra pretentious. But then she's, look, she got $10 billion for a company that was maybe worth six. So
we'll see what happens, because where are they going to pull?
The conditions on the trust are itchy, Aileen. There's not a lot of buyers.
Where are they going to pull $10 billion? Like, they have to get serious financing for that $10 billion, because they were trying to – they need another $2 billion, because earlier when they were doing their, quote, math in, like, that Malibu apartment, them trying to figure out if they can afford it was, like, 3 seconds, and it was very funny. Shiv goes, yeah, so what? It's in half now, so $8 or $9 billion. And after this dojo sale, we'll have like $2 to $3 billion. And then Kendall's like, yeah, if we just have to really put this together, we'll get financing from some schmuck there, these guys, and we'll really put it together. Like, they're just so certain that they're going to get this money together. And then you see, and this is, I guess we can talk about in the forecast later, but you see in the previews, Kendall is talking to Stewie again. And I think that he's trying to go for – to get help for financing for this, to get PGN.
I have to ask, is there not a single other private equity person who Kendall knows that he could ask for money? Like, is there no one – it's like Vanderpump Rules. Is there no one else to sleep with in all of LA?
Clearly not. He's been – Sammy, he's been traveling around the world having serious discussions with serious fucking people, okay? Yeah. So –
using his social capital?
Yeah, exactly.
One of my favorite lines, speaking of the financing, maybe my second favorite interaction, I guess if we're going to rank them, was the kid sitting outside trying to figure out the price that they're going to offer.
Uh-huh.
And Roman being the only one who's thinking about this in terms of actual money. And Kendall's like, yeah, what if we – maybe not just like – not like nickel and dime them and go to 10. And – Roman's like, well, what's it worth? And then they have the banker on the phone who's like, whatever a buyer will pay. And Roman goes, I really wish I went to Harvard Business School like UT. It is intimidating talking to an intellectual giant like yourself. That was one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, the way that they ripped apart that guy, Tellis, what's his name, Telly? It was just, you're right. It was so funny because it's like kind of true. Like nobody really knows anything. And in real life. And like they're smart people, but like at the end of the day, like you'll pay what you're willing to pay for it. And the negotiation I thought also was hilarious because Shiv is just not good at it.
No.
In the way that like they went from their offer at 8, right? That's where they're starting. And like there's a lot of room to negotiate for $2 billion, but they just jumped up to 9.5 in a split second because she talked to Tom. She didn't even wait.
Did he go to 9? Did he go to 9? What's Dad's ceiling?
Yeah, she didn't even wait to hear what Tom was going to say. Like she didn't have to go there, but she pushed him to go higher essentially. And she pushed them to go higher. Like she was almost like a little bit too anxious. She couldn't like hold it together. That's what I got from that scene. The 12 line was also just like a fuck you. It was like, oh yeah, well, we're going to go to 12. And Tom was like, okay, fine, sure. Yeah, that's our ceiling too. And then they're like, I think we got to go to 9.95.
Tom correctly got a 10 feeling. I'm getting a 10 feeling. I love that. That felt very accurate. I love when Roman broke down the money and he was like, yeah, 10 billion rounds it out. That number is extremely divisible. I mean, you do know that $500 million is $500 million. A million is 1,000,000. So you want to pay 500,000 that we could be spending on fucking snowmobiles and sushi.
Exactly. I mean, the way that money is discussed in this conversation is also pretty in this whole episode, because also like there's the Connor of it all who talks about like the $100 million. Yeah. Connor goes, but it's kind of a lot, right? When they're talking about the 100 million he needs to spend just to keep his 1% not to be from being squeezed from both sides. Willa goes, 100 million. Yeah. I mean, if you spent it, you'll still be rich. And Connor goes, I mean, nevertheless, minus 100 million. I thought that was so funny. Like, it was just the way that they just casually talk about hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
To your point earlier, like Roman seems in this episode to be the only kind of serious one. He seems like he doesn't want to screw Dad. He doesn't really want to hurt him. He feels weird about it. He doesn't really revel in it at the end when they like are at the car and they get the phone call from Logan, which was really funny. Like, congratulations on saying the highest number, you fucking morons.
That's really funny. All they did.
Exactly.
Like, you just said the highest number.
You just said a big number. Like, congrats, you fucking morons. Yeah. But, like, Shiv and Kendall did really great acting in that moment where she does this, like, nervous, maniacal laugh. Where she's like, you know what I mean? And it was almost like she was scared, holy shit. But that was the only moment that they talked to their dad too.
Yeah, but didn't you think it was interesting that Logan was asking for people to make him laugh and like to make jokes, and they were kind of making a joke, but also amongst them having a good time and laughing? Like, how frequently do you ever see them laughing as a group?
Right. Right. No, they're very rarely together as a threesome. I was watching also like that post-episode thing, and one of the creators was saying like they're very rarely do you see them together making their relationship work, the three kids. And then I think that this can like lead us into the conversation about what's going on with Logan this whole episode. Overall, I thought the negotiation, the kids also talking about 100 and saying like, oh, I loved it. I'm so excited. But is it bullshit?
Yeah. You know, my only concern is that the 100 is too good.
Too good.
Like, why hasn't anyone done it before?
The three of them, like, skirting around the issue that they don't really want to do this thing.
But they're just looking for something to do.
Looking for something, they need something to do is so good. But let's quickly go back to Roman. Sorry, my bad. I went off topic. But what I was saying earlier was that Roman seems to be the only, like person taking this everything seriously and not wanting to screw dad. So he kind of squirmed when they were laughing after Logan called. He like doesn't want to be on dad's bad side.
He texted him happy birthday.
Well, yeah, we see that in the next episode or whatever, the preview for the season. He's the only one who you know, the episode starts off with him going through branding with their branding team, which also is just so, so funny. I wrote down
having done it.
Yeah, he goes, I feel like we said iconic and you guys are leaning ironic. It's so funny. Ugh, the writers on this show. And he also is the only one who is like, wait, I thought we were all into 100. But he also doesn't – he's the one who like asks – Shiv, like, do you think it's a little too small scale? Because he's thinking it's a little too small scale.
Right.
And she goes, no, do you?
You know what would kind of make sense, though? If they bought PGN, the 100 would make sense as a vertical under PGN. Yeah. And Shiv kind of landed on that for a brief second where she was like, we could do both. But, like, she doesn't even think about it that way. She's just like, oh, we'll just do it. Like, we'll do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. To your point about Roman, I completely agree. I think that he is also – and this kind of follows on like what he did in season two finale when Jamie was trying to get the financing from the sketchy people, like the foreign investors, and Roman was like, I don't think it's really real. Roman is the only one who's actually like paying attention and looking out for all of their interests and seeing other people's incentives and things. Yeah. He says, would Telly rather make $35 million in fees on an acquisition or fees on a $5 million seed round for the 100? And he's the only one who's saying, like when they're talking to the banker while they're at Nan's, he's saying like, you're jerking it to your fucking yacht catalog there, T. Right. Like you're going to bill us $200 million for this bullshit advice. And like he's the only one who sees that there are people who are trying to take advantage of them besides like their own interpersonal dynamics. It's not just about trying to screw dad. And he says, you want to fuck dad, you want to fuck Tom. I'm the only one who doesn't want to fuck anyone and actually wants to start a business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he also like seems just so sarcastic in the whole negotiation up until the last point when he realizes it could be real, when he like talks about like the upside. But and then they're like, oh, hello. But when in the beginning, when they're like waiting for Nan's headache to end, he's like, oh, great. Get to talk to an old lady about newspapers. Like, yeah. But I think also like them talking about the 100 and the way they're pitching it, like Kendall being like high calorie info snacks.
High
info parcels. Or info snacks. Like just – it's just so – it's a parody. It's like such a parody. Like the 100 is Substack meets Masterclass meets The Economist meets The New Yorker. It's just – it's a parody. It's the way rich people would be pitching. And the fact that they like literally don't treat anyone around them with an ounce of respect, like the way that they hang up on the branding people, like in the middle of the conversation, he just closes the computer. The way that they make – the people who just flew in to listen to their pitch keep waiting outside and then eventually just ghosts them while they're there.
Yeah, to go fly to Nan's.
They don't give a fuck.
It was really funny when he was like, tell them to stuff their petrodollars up their human rights record. Yeah, they're just like calling people to this huge house in Malibu like, why don't you save the money on the house and go buy Pierce? You know, like that's less money you have to put up as collateral.
Around the office, we have so many colorful framed art prints and photos. It creates such a fun atmosphere, and it gives our space that unique Betches character. I wanted to frame some stuff at home too, but custom framing can be so difficult and so expensive. So the things I want to display end up collecting dust in a closet. But Framebridge makes it easy and affordable to get your special artwork and memories in frames so you can spice up your space with ease. I love Framebridge. I framed my ketubah for my wedding. The process was unbelievably easy. They send you a canister to send in your artwork. They send you a few different options of ways that they can frame it. You get to pick. They're actually helping me also design the frame that works best with the picture and best for my home. And getting custom frames can be difficult. FrameBridge is easy and affordable to custom frame just about anything. You can easily order online at FrameBridge.com or visit a retail store if you need some guidance. You can also upload a digital photo for them to print or mail your item in using their free, secure, prepaid packaging. Then FrameBridge custom frames your piece in the studio using the highest quality materials and ships it to your door in days for free. See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit FrameBridge.com or a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's FrameBridge.com. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you just need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been in therapy for years, and nothing has transformed my life quite as much as my therapy experience. And one of the things that I love about therapy is that it gives me all the tools I need to figure out how to manage my time, and also figuring out what depletes me, what gives me energy. Sometimes too much socializing depletes me, so I've learned how to manage the amount of time that I'm going out versus staying in, the amount of new people I'm meeting versus making sure I have that me time for myself, and that's definitely a skill that I've honed in therapy. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Betches today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Betches.
I really thought they nailed so many of the like media doublespeak. Like they want to talk about talking and like The 100 is a private members club, but for everyone, clickbait, but for smart people.
I know. And also when Shiv is talking about the business, she's like, as a business, it's much talking about PGN as a business. It's much better than the made up company of dreams we were ready to pitch. And then everyone's like, you were obsessed with it. This was your idea. And she's like, I know. But it's bullshit. Is it kind of bullshit? It was good. It was perfect.
It was also funny to watch them try to practice their pitch for about 3 seconds. Uh-huh. And Kendall's like, we have the ethos of a nonprofit, but a path to crazy margins.
It's like James Kennedy pitching, like something absurd. I think we should talk about the other thing that was happening. Like the kids, we discussed, we talked about everything about the kids. Let's talk about Logan on his side of, and he's in New York. He's on the East Coast. They're on the West Coast where it's sunshine and it looks rather dreary on the East Coast with Logan. He's also going through a crisis, existential, emotional crisis because hey, it's his birthday. He's another year older and he's getting old. And none of his children are there.
Connor's there, Aileen.
I am the eldest son.
I think this is intentional. Like we're supposed to kind of forget it.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah. Connor's there. Connor's really focused on himself only because the election is near. But Logan seems rather sad. He's really upset. He doesn't feel happy. He even says, like, why is everyone so fucking happy? And and he really only has like Kerry and Colin, obviously, but Kerry as his go-to. She's following him around in
friend, assistant, and advisor.
Advisor, yeah. She was great. There's also Tom on the other side too. There's Tom, there's Greg, Frank. Greg. Say something funny. Be funny.
Start.
No, Frank, be funny. Start. Be funny. And Carl, oh wait, Carl. Carl said one of my fucking funniest lines. He goes, butter my bean pole when he was like, dog. It was just, Carl's also one of the funniest people on the show because he's so lame and pathetic. And he's so scared of Logan, like shits his pants. But Logan seems very sad. And Kerry asks, is he okay? And after he goes, why is everyone so fucking happy? And Carrie's like, are you okay? And he goes, essentially saying like, yeah, I should be happy. But he said, I got done a huge fucking deal in exactly the right time. I got ATN plus Pierce. I got the election. And then he goes, I got plenty on my plate. And Kerry goes, sure. And then he asks about the Cardinal and whatever. And that line to me, like, made me feel like Kerry is pregnant.
I did too.
He adds that as something else going on. Like, I got plenty on my plate. She goes, sure. Like, she was only responding to that last line. And she has, like, a button on her blazer, like, buttoned up to cover. It seems like maybe they're doing it on purpose.
I just thought she was very, like, forward towards him, especially in that moment when she moved closer to him. And they already foreshadowed that with the whole maca root thing at the wedding.
Right.
And they also kind of alluded to it when Roman was like, take my dad's cock out of your mouth. You can pop it back in. Yeah. Meaning like there's clearly something happening.
Well, they know that he's sleeping with her.
Right. But I mean, that just makes a pregnancy like all the more possible.
Well, you can't really get pregnant through oral sex, man.
Yeah, but you think that's the only thing they're doing? They're not?
No, I know.
It's not just ending there.
No, I know. Just kidding. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying.
She seems very much like
– into it.
His equal also in this episode. She is the one – not his equal, but she's very much like takes a very leading lady approach in this episode as compared to previous episodes. Like she's talked about, but she talks in this episode. She speaks for him with the children. She – gets Greg, like she talks on behalf of the business, like we are, you know, like she might be like a corporate spy or something. Bridget,
she's a friend, assistant, and advisor.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, she also notably said that Marsha is shopping in Milan forever. So she's kind of the one to deliver the information that Marsha's out of the picture, which is interesting. Marsha did just renegotiate her funding last season. Yeah. After he slept with Rhea. So.
Yeah, she's out. Marsha's out. Carrie's in. And he also seems to really rely on her for input, too. Like, during the negotiation with Pierce, she goes, Carrie, I'm going to need your input. And then she gives some good input. She's like, well, you know, the offer is insulting, but it's not like you're wasting relationship capital because she hates you, Nan. So you could tell that the dynamics have changed. Like also in the beginning, you can see through their body language, they like sort of touch each other's hands as they like part ways a little bit through the party. But really, she just continues to follow him around.
Yeah. It is noteworthy, though, that Logan – sure, he might be like fucking Carrie or whatever, but he isn't particularly happy. He leaves his party in the middle to go with Colin to go sit at a diner, and he gets kind of tender and like really existential, starts talking about the afterlife. And that was a really touching scene because you could literally never see him doing that with anyone in his family.
Right. He just seems like, I think because like he's about to sell his business, his big business that he's been his whole life, his children are not there with him. The three of them, Connor is there. He's moved on from his previous man. He's starting a new marriage. He's potentially going to have another child, but he still is.
Well, we made that assumption.
We think. I mean, they allude to it. And it seems like he's really disappointed in like people, the people as a whole. He's disappointed with where the future is going. He doesn't like, you know, media, and he just seems just unhappy like where everything has gone. And he's sort of questioning like, what is it? What's even the point like after this? Like, this is all we have. And he doesn't really talk to Colin, like, as a two-way chat. That was also something that they said in the after show. Like, he's, like, really asking him rhetorical questions. And they also said he respects Colin because the only one who just kind of just shows up to do his job. Everyone else is, like, does everything else.
They're talking about talking.
You're my best pal.
Thank you.
He also, I think, when he was saying, like, he's, like, because this is the first time the kids, for real, are still against him for the longest period of time, it seems. And it seems like when he's talking about the market, I got the sense that he was really talking about like, he's like, yeah, sure, people, I'm 100 feet tall. But when people are together, they form a market. And it's almost, and so he no longer has as much power. It feels like he's worried that the kids together, working together, could really fuck him up. even though he thinks they're morons and doesn't respect them. I got the sense that, like, you know, I don't have as much power as I did. So I think he's going to try to get that back, because usually in all episodes past, like, if it's two of them, he at least has one. Like, he can break them up. But this is the first time where the three of them are really against him for the longest period of time. And I think that scares him.
Right. I took that as, like, kind of a – I wasn't even really thinking about that in the context of the kids. I was thinking more about that in the context of, like, his birthday and sort of his philosophy on life and, like, wondering what it's all worth, kind of. But
yeah.
I want to get more into that when we talk about the forecast later.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Ready to redefine your relationship with alcohol? Whether you're trying to cut back or just want to explore a non-alcoholic alternative, Athletic Brewing is a game changer. They offer a variety of different full-flavored brews with no alcohol, allowing you to sip and celebrate anytime and anywhere. Do you like hazy IPAs, sweet, fruity sours? Athletic Brewing has an assortment of non-alcoholic beers in almost any style you can think of. One thing I really like is a great Sunday brunch. And sometimes, you know, you kind of want to have a drink during it. But also it's Sunday and you kind of want to get your life together. That's the perfect occasion to have an Athletic Brew non-alcoholic beer. Athletic brews a variety of great-tasting, award-winning non-alcoholic beers, including IPAs, Goldens, Extra Dark Brews, Sours, Hazies, and more. Many of which are only available online and for a limited time. They offer hassle-free delivery right to your door when you order at athleticbrewing.com. Athletic Brews Bevs you can drink anytime, anywhere, and still go right back to whatever you were doing. It's a great fit for parenting, playing sports, watching sports, doing chores, late nights, and early mornings, so you can imbibe without worry. And when you support Athletic, you support a company that cares. They're a certified B Corp and donate up to $2 million annually to protect and restore outdoor spaces around the globe through the Two for the Trails program. Try Athletic Brewing non-alcoholic beers for yourself. Use code BETCHES to get 15% off your first order at athleticbrewing.com. That's BETCHES. At checkout for 15% off your first order. Near beer. Exclusions and conditions apply. Athletic Brewing Company. Fit for all times.
All right. I know we have more characters to talk about, but I think the best way to talk about them is through rating them. So we're doing now, it's time for our segment, We Rate You. No, nah, he rates you. And if you listened to last episode or if you did not, we have three categories / superlatives. We have the number one boy, who is like the best character who wins this episode. We have out of the will, the person who's like most out of favor with Logan. He is losing this episode, and or she. And then we have bore on the floor, which is like the cringiest, most humiliated, just biggest loser in a different way. Never, no yeah. power, mostly just me. So, okay, should we start with number one boy?
Yes.
You're my number one boy.
Okay, Sammy, who is your number one boy?
My number one boy, as we alluded to earlier, is Roman. He is like the most on the ball. I think he has a lot more going on beneath the surface. He's like a duck, calm on the outside and paddling beneath, you know, and I think that he is like the only one who remotely deserves the money that they have.
Maybe,
he's the only
now.
One who could keep it on his own.
Here's the thing. I think I agree with you now after like kind of rewatching it. But initially, I had Tom as my number one boy, because I changed my mind.
For the sake of this conversation, let's argue that your Roman. Number one boy is Tom.
Okay, so here's my argument for Tom. I think Tom has now just beat all the kids. Right, he is most respected to a degree, because I'm going to add the caveat that he is now being used as a shiv pawn, almost like talk to your fucking wife. Like he wouldn't say that to somebody he really respects. However, he does get Logan does call him Tommy. The reason why I also think that he's the number one boy here, he's the one who shuts Greg down a lot. Greg is just the moron. he's talking about how either the disgusting brother is, and Tom is like, you know, no, like that was ironized. He really rips apart the date, talking about the capacious bag, like that whole grilling of the whole roasting of the Bridget was the funniest fucking line. We didn't even talk about that before.
We'll get there in a second.
We'll get there. That was funny. But Tom, and then also Tom calls Shiv to talk about Nan. And now when I think about it, maybe he was sort of playing both sides. Like maybe he was warning her about the Pierce thing. Like maybe he was planting the idea on purpose, done out of stupidity, which was what I thought before. And now I'm coming to realize that maybe it was out of like sort of – because there is still some love there. So maybe he was doing it just to like throw her a bone after completely fucking her over in the last season.
My sense of that was like he didn't even really necessarily know why he was doing it. It was a combination of things that I think he doesn't even personally understand the mix of his own motivations for doing it. I think part of it was like a dating tease a little bit. Part of it was a little bit of a business tease. I think it just provided him an in that he didn't even necessarily – know what his angle was, but he knew that the angle would move something forward.
Yeah.
In a way that he wanted to do, because he wants to communicate with her. She's the one who doesn't want to communicate. So he's like needling her with an excuse for why he's doing it that kind of serves a dual purpose for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I think Tom could be number one boy, but maybe Roman wins because he just seems like the most. Just like
with it,
he seems like the most aware person in this whole thing. Like he actually doesn't want to screw over Dad, like we talked about. All right, who's out of the will?
Fuck off!
I'm kicking Shiv out of the will.
Same,
because the girl, she has no sense of the money, no sense of how to negotiate. No, she is so blinded by, like. She has she has no long-term sense of what she's trying to get.
The episode starts off where she's not even being loyal to the kids about 100. She's talking to the Jimenez team, right. talking to see if like there's something there that she could still get a position about like in the election.
Even though she's obsessed with the 100. It was her idea.
Exactly. You know, she doesn't know what she wants. And all she wants is to win. And her ego has fully taken over. And you could just sense it in the way that she just like flip-flops in her emotions. This like she's great. She's really confident. Then she talks to Tom. Tom tells her about Nan. She's like really shaken. Then she's like, fuck this. We got to get PGN. She's really on top of her game. She gets so excited that Nan only wants to talk to her. It's like she is the number one girl in like the whole Nan thing. Like she just gets – she's like, I'm fucking divorcing. Like everything.
Yeah.
It's just her energy, a roller coaster of energy with Shiv.
Her energy is sort of like a 22-year-old who just like broke up with their college boyfriend in the real world. That's kind of the vibe she's giving off, because you say she wants to win, but I don't even think she knows what winning would look like, because she's playing no long game whatsoever. She's playing the very, very, very short game. I don't think she has any clue what she even wants to achieve beyond like the scene that's in front of her.
She goes to the apartment basically to gloat. She knows she's supposed to be hoteling,
and to see if he was with anyone. I think
maybe.
I think that was like a.
But I know. Oh. I think this comes off the win of the bidding, saying the biggest number, and she goes to the apartment because it's in the calendar invite, and she goes there essentially to gloat, and it doesn't go her way really, because it kind of is very. It comes off really sad, like. The way that Tom is like, I could maybe see if I could make love to you. And she's like, do you even want to? And he's like, it was just that, it was really sad. that part.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't think she like even had a plan for why she was going back. Like, I think she just wanted, similar to how he just called her to tell her about the Naomi Pierce thing. I don't even think he knew what he wanted out of that interaction. I think it's just wanting to be
around each
in each other's ears so that they can get somewhere. But I don't even think,
because they wanted to be near each other.
Like, she wants him to want her, but she also wants to reject him. That's part of why she wants him, mm-hmm. I think. And part of why she wants PGN is because her dad hates them.
Oh, of course.
It's all like, she only, I think really one of her biggest problems is that she only sort of exists in relation to the men around her. She doesn't have a core, a central core that she's actually like moving forward based on any sort of internal compass. It's just, what am I reacting to that someone just did? And even before she was in the family in this conflict, she was in politics and she was with Nate, who she was like sleeping with.
Who's in the previews.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely not going to get, you know, he'll still stay relevant. And it's like, she was cheating on Tom the whole time. Everything is just in reaction to what's in front of her. She has no long game at all.
The children all have issues with the opposite sex and relationships because of their parents. I mean, like, there's no way around it. Like, they have a fucked up upbringing. All right. Definitely. Who is the boar on the floor?
Bullshit. Boar on the floor.
It's got to be Greg because he brought Bridget Random Fuck to this party. Although that was one of the funniest scenes when they're talking about her capacious Burberry bag. I would hate to be working in Burberry PR marketing today. That is just it's devastating. So like,
what does she need all that room for? Her flats for the subway?
Her lunch pail?
Her flats for the subway is just like the perfect like – way to describe
classist
like,
shit.
Yes, yeah. Classist shit. Like when he also when Tom goes, you're a laughing stock of polite society. You will never go to the opera again.
That like, I had to catch on my second one. That was tough.
It was so funny. But all of this, like the comments of class, how it is really ridiculous because he's making fun of it. Like how he goes, you'll never go to the opera again. But then also when he comments on like the flats for the subway, like, and that's something to make fun of someone for. I lost it. It was.
Is she
so
from the apps,
good.
Greg? Like Carrie was actually at least looking at it from a strategic point of view. Tom just wanted to fuck with him.
Yeah, no, Greg. He fell for Tom's like joke about like the cameras. He goes and tells Logan. It's all so absurd.
Smell Greg's finger. That was so. Oh my gosh.
Him.
Just going back to Logan being bored and wanting everyone to roast him, Greg's the only one who actually will do it. And he goes, Uncle Logan, where are your kids? Yeah. And Logan goes, everyone smell Greg's finger. Guess what it smells like?
Yeah, win a buck. Yeah, no.
That was just such a good comeback by Logan.
And the way that he like kind of – Greg like revels in the fact that like Logan kind of shares a bit of a smile, and then he goes over what he said to him, and he like Tom's like, oh, so you blamed her, but Greg's like, she's had a bit of a wacky tabacky or worse, and maybe she's, and then Tom cuts her, she's a drug addled cock monster, so you blamed her, and then they get cut off. But that was just Greg is the boar on the floor. He was cringe all episode. Just everything was cringe, including bringing up the disgusting brothers like many times.
He's kind of the ringleader of that. Also, the date asking Logan for a selfie and going like, "You really did a great deal, Kerching, am I right?"
You know, I always thought it was Kerching.
So did I, but I think she's whatever.
All right, let's talk about forecast. Let's do the forecast. What are predictions? We don't have a lot to base this on, but just some thoughts from the episode.
I have a big prediction.
Oh, I'm going to hear it.
I predict that Logan is going to die this season. And my reason for that is that anytime you get any character talking about the afterlife, it's never a great sign for their arc. I think the way he was getting really existential was kind of the main foreshadowing of that. And just his his overall tone. I mean, it started with a health issue for him. Mm-hmm. He's had other, you know, he had other scenes where he was had health problems. And I just feel that that would kind of make sense as the it's the last season. So
I see it because, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I think I, if I actually see it happening, I could see them like alluding to it. But I get why that makes sense because it's like the whole thing is about how the kids are trying to like beat their dad, be separated, separate from the dad. But in the end, if he's gone, they'll feel like a big gaping hole. They'll feel like they need their dad. The dad is very right about business. He, I mean, he doesn't, he's not right about the way to rear a family, but but he's kind of like this, he's a force. And I can't even imagine the family without them. They all know one day he's not going to be here, but yeah, I can see why that would like round out the show.
I also think it it will – they feel that he's sort of like invincible, immortal. And mm-hmm. that's kind of why they have not – one of the reasons why I don't think that they can really get it together is because they live in his shadow, but he wants them to live in his shadow, but he wants them to beat him, but they can't because he doesn't really want them to and he didn't set them up to be able to in any mm-hmm. capacity. But he doesn't want them to. That's the other thing. It's like – he doesn't – I can't see him ever giving them anything until he dies. Mm-hmm. And the question I think becomes what happens to the company after he dies? Mm-hmm. And that's really like what I think will be the resolution or what we're going to be left with is seeing what happens to the company itself. Because that's the real succession question. Like it's the succession of the company.
Right. Right. Do you think it's going to get sold? Do you think the Gojo deal is going to happen?
I don't know.
Because in the previews.
Yeah.
They show the app that says Stargo, right?
That could be like a beta model though.
Could be for sure.
I can't see it happening.
The thing that I just, you see so many things where Tom like punches Roman or like puts him against a wall. Like where Carl goes, if you fucking fuck up this deal for dad, you are going to be like, whatever he says. I don't know. He threatens them in some way. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't think it's going to go smoothly, right? Like Mattson is watching, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to go as smooth as they're saying. And now Logan has this, and maybe the reason why this Pierce thing was like the setup is because like Logan now has this ulterior motive to not make this deal go through so the kids don't get their money and can't right. fund the acquisition of Pierce. So right. that was a thought I had.
Because it's not like he's selling because he needs to. He's selling because he doesn't want to leave $5 billion on the table.
He just feels it in his bones. I get it. It's the time.
Yeah, but the point is like he – it's not like he's desperate and distressed. He yeah. wants to sell, but I could see him just as easily not selling so he can screw the kids. Mm-hmm. Is that your prediction that he – what's your
prediction?
He's
not going to sell. I think
– or is it that Carrie is –
he's not going to sell. I think Carrie's okay. pregnant.
Yeah.
I think Connor's wedding episode is going to be so fucking funny. I'm Agreed. Really excited for that.
No one does weddings like Succession.
Also, the thing that we didn't talk about was the last scene when Logan calls Sid. And then you see in the preview, Logan is walking the floor of ATN. So I was thinking that like I'm getting the sense that this is – Logan is going to get super involved in ATN because yeah. A, he has that motive to beat out the Pierce thing. And it's his last own asset. He still has ATN, right? It's spun off. So from the deal, that's what yeah. I got from that. So it's his last piece of something that he still has – it's his legacy in a way. And so he's going to be really involved in it. And that's going to be very, very funny, but interesting because Tom is at the head of it. And so that also relationship dynamic is going to be tested.
Also, that has been Logan's passion. The news is Logan's real passion. That's like where this all started. So I think that's an interesting like full circle thing as well.
Mm-hmm. And then the election is also another layer of it because that's coming. And then you see in the previews, like Mencken is now might flip sides to like the kids and Pierce But who knows? Did you see that part? There were a lot of preview scenes where it was like, what's his name? Roman talking to Mattson, Roman talking to Mencken. They're like trying to get him from all sides.
Number one boy.
And the thing that I was watching when I was getting what I really wanted to see, and maybe I'm hoping that it happens in the end, is like, I really want to see Kendall and Logan like being on the same side again, like being friends. I think, like, I don't know, I can't see it happening unless like Logan's on his deathbed, but I would like, because that's something, that's how it started. This whole thing started with, it all happened because Kendall went against, he was Logan's, you know, number one boy for real. And he was ready to take over. And now he's been so far from that now, like for season after season, that I really think that would round it out. Is if they're both in good favor and they're a little bit more, like Logan respects Kendall and Kendall respects Logan in return, like he's not trying to kill dad. I think that would be the resolution I personally want.
Right. I think like narratively that would make a lot of sense. Kendall, I think, is technically the protagonist of the show. And that would be like a narrative journey that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Because I think if you don't have that, then you have a sense of lack of completion. But again, that just all depends how they tell it.
I think it's got to happen. It has to happen. Something has to happen between the relationship of Logan and Kendall specifically, because that's he was it in the beginning. Like, Kendall was my favorite character in the beginning, even though he was like the worst. I like really loved him, and I kind of still do, even though he's taken like this backseat role a little. But I think he's going to come back, and he's going to be less of a joke than he was before, because he's season after season, he's just complete joke. And
he's going to have to like shape up quick then, because like he's still kind of a joke right now.
I mean, he absolutely is.
Like, when he comes in, he's like, we're starting a company, kids.
With my brother. Yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Yeah, no, I don't know how fast he's going to be able to like turn into serious Kendall. He's like, I've smoked a fucking horse. I need something to keep me going.
But maybe something to straighten him up a bit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see. We literally will see.
We'll hear for you
along the way. And I'm just very excited about this season.
I am too. I'm sad it's the end, but like it's exciting that it's the end, because then I'm just going to rewatch the whole thing again.
So I think we call it. That is it for this week's recap. Be sure to check out our written recap and find out who deserves to fuck off this week on Betches.com. And of course, be sure to rate, review, and follow this show, ATN Betches, brought to you by At Betches, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now.
And we'll have all new episodes every single Monday of this show. So be sure to subscribe right now so you don't miss our next episode. And you can follow me at Aileen.
Follow me at Sammy. And until next time,
we here for you.
ATN, we here for you.
At Betches is produced by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, Rebecca Sosmakat, and Aliza Zim. Editing by Basilio Perez. Be sure to follow At Betches on Instagram and send us your emails to podcast@betches.com.
Betches.